one says a magic word.
Not that I know of, she told him. Why don't you scream some magic words at the gates for a while and tell me how it turns out?
Dugar cleared his throat again.
I heard you the first time, she told him.
Do any of these actually come up to the surface?
Hugh tapped the map with his finger.
We don't know, Dugar said.
We've tried mapping them several times, but we end up turned around, Ilara said. There's only one way from the tunnels into the castle, though, and it's through this ring.
She traced the outline of the circular tunnel for him.
This is a huge security risk, Lamar said. Do you actually use these tunnels for anything?
Those who go into the tunnels don't always come back,
Joanna told him. Lamar turned to Ilara.
She said that those who go into the tunnels don't always come back.
Why?
Hugh asked. Ilara sighed.
I wish I knew. We don't know, Savannah said. Don't worry about it. We can handle the tunnels.
Hugh leaned forward.
Here is how this assault will go. The attack will come in the evening.
How do you know that?
Ilara asked.
I've prepared to fight Nez for years. He is a cheapskate. Even the youngest vampire he has costs upward of 50 grand to produce. He will attempt to intimidate us into surrendering by fielding a lot of undead at once. He will follow that with a phone call and a show of force designed to convince us to surrender. When that fails, he will rush the castle with his vanguard. He will count on the psychological impact of this force and our awareness that the sun is setting and soon it will be dark and we will be defenseless. If the moat does its job, we can repel this assault.
If?
Savannah raised her eyebrows.
If, Hugh said. If the moat doesn't soften them up, it will get ugly. However, it is unlikely he will commit more than 50 vampires. He typically brings between 200 and 300 vampires.
Ilara startled. 300 vampires? She couldn't even wrap her head around that many undead.
Yes? Hugh asked.
Nothing, continue.
And since he knows he will be fighting the Iron Dogs, we can count on the top range of that number. It's highly unlikely he would send more than a quarter of his force. 50 is a nice round number, and Nez likes round numbers.
Hugh tapped the map of Balier.
He will send the mass of undead straight at the front gate. Even if the moat fails, we can take 50 vampires. We will bleed, but we can take them. Once that assault fails, Nez will do something loud and theatrical. He might field beasts or pull some mages out of his sleeve. Whatever form this new threat will take, it will be designed to keep our attention focused front and center. Meanwhile, his crews, which will have been digging since before the fight started, will be breaking into the castle tunnels from below. The vampires are fast diggers, and he might bring specialized help to speed things up. While we are trying to hold off whatever it is battering us from the front, the undead will make their way into the castle and massacre us from the rear. Hugh fixed Savannah with his stare.
So, when you say don't worry about the tunnels, I need you to be very sure.
I'll take care of it, Ilara said.
Okay, Hugh said.
She opened her mouth to argue and realized he didn't say anything else.
Then that's settled. Can we attack Nez directly?
Savannah asked.
Unlikely, Lamar told her. For things like these, Nez travels in a convoy of matadors. A matador is an 8x8 armored personnel carrier, 9 meters long, 3 meters tall, and almost 3 meters wide. It has a monocoque V hull, which means its nose and hull slope to deflect projectiles.
Lamar held his left hand in front of him, palm up, and touched the fingertips of his right hand to it, forming a sideways V.
It sits a driver and passenger in the front, and can transport up to 10 personnel in the back. Level 4 armor, suspended seats, blast mitigation floor, all the works. It can trench at 2 meters, ford a stream a meter deep, climb steps and steep hills, and it turns on a dime for a vehicle of its size. It runs like a dream during tech, but it chugs along during magic as well. It also can be set up to carry either a 50 cal or a sorceress ballister, depending on your preference. Nez has a fleet of them.
We used to have them too, Stoyan said. The long and short of it, matadors are unbreachable by anything we have. We could probably drop a rock on it from above and crush it, but we don't have a catapult precise enough to do it.
We need to do something about the approach from the northeastern side, Hugh said. We are missing a siege engine on the corner tower. It requires specialized parts.
Is it a budget issue? Ilara asked.
No, it's an availability issue, Hugh said.
We have it on order in Lexington, Lamar said. We traded some silver we recovered for it. It won't be ready in time.
We'll have to compensate with archers, Hugh said.
We can dig some fortifications there, Stoyan said. It may slow down the cleaning crew, but it won't do anything against vampires.
We could plant tangleweed, Savannah said.
Good idea.
Ilara turned to Joanna.
How much do we have?
Enough,
Joanna signed. Can this tangleweed hold a vampire? Bale asked.
Yes, if there is enough of it, Dugar said.
Where would you need it planted?
Savannah leaned toward the map. The rest of the advisors leaned in, and Ilara met Hugh's eyes.
300 vampires.
He winked at her. For some reason, the wink took the dread right out of her. She rolled her eyes and leaned forward to take a glance at the map. Ilara stared at the roster of families. Around her, the bailey bustled with life, people going to and fro, trying to squeeze as much as they could out of the fading evening light. They had 2 days until the deadline, but it was collectively decided that Nez couldn't be trusted farther than they could throw him, so they'd been pulling people into the castle, in stages. Children with caretakers first, then older people, now finally the able-bodied adults. She squeezed the first wave into the left barracks, praising the source of all life that they had renovated the place when the Iron Dogs joined them. Once the barracks filled, they put the next wave into the utility buildings behind the keep, then into the chapel building, which they had converted into living quarters. Balia was so crowded, it was bursting at the seams.
Is the chapel completely full? She asked. Almost,
Joanna signed.
Ilara sighed, studying the roster.
We're going to have to start putting sleeping bags in the keep hallway. On the second floor,
Joanna touched her arm. Ilara looked up. Serenity Helton was walking toward them, oblivious to the people scurrying all around her, a blank look on her face. Ilara's heart dropped. She hurried forward and grabbed Serenity's hands.
What is it?
The seer stared at her unblinking. Her lips moved, but no sound came. Joanna grabbed Ilara's arm.
Coming! Now!
What?
She is saying they are coming, over and over!
The anxiety that clamped Ilara over the last few days burst in a scalding rush.
Hurry!
She whispered, sending her voice through the entire castle.
They're coming! Hurry!
The people scattered. In the village, a bell rang. Hugh came running around the corner.
Nez is coming,
she told him, pointing at Serenity. He glanced at the seer and spun off, barking orders. Ilara climbed the steps to the outer wall and then to the top of the flanking tower. From here, she could see the entire village. People ran, streaming to the castle. She turned to Joanna.
Find Magdalene. Take her to the tunnels.
Joanna took off at a run. The village emptied as people rushed to Balje.
Come on,
she urged in her head.
Come on.
Iron Dogs poured out of the gate, forming a protective line, shielding the evacuees. On top of the keep and on the towers, the ballistae and catapult teams cranked the massive siege weapons. She heard chanting, almost in unison, as the artillery teams primed the sorceress bolts. Shapeshifters burst out of the woods, running at top speed toward the castle, Hugh's scouts coming in.
Seconds crept by, echoing the beating of her heart. Come on! Creatures streamed out of the woods, like an evil river, flowing in rivulets between the trunks to flood the grass. Vampires. Hundreds and hundreds of vampires, smeared with sunblock in green, blue, and red. The Iron Dogs unsheathed their weapons. She tried desperately to sort through the people running to the gates. Did they get everyone? Was someone missing? She couldn't tell.
The vampires kept coming and coming, widening in a crescent, blending together into a monstrous mass. Terrifying, stinking of magic that shouldn't have existed. Endless.
Hugh was right. If they hadn't had the warning, they might have panicked. Even she, with all of her power, had to fight a shiver. In a couple of hours, the sun would set, and the monstrous horde would roll over the castle. Next to her, Joanna squeezed her fingers into fists and relaxed them again. The evacuees slowed to a trickle. Did they get everyone? Anxiety boiled in her. She tried to count the vampires to keep her mind focused. 3, 5, 8, 10. Hugh ran up the stairs and loomed next to her, his expression hard.
You are right, she told him.
This day was a long time coming, Hugh told her.
Beth ran up to the tower.
There is a phone call for you.
Is it Nez?
Yes, lady.
Right on schedule, Hugh said. See if you can piss him off. He doesn't think clearly when he's angry.
I can do that.
Oh, I know you can. Have fun, love.
Ilara turned and walked down the stairs, forcing herself to move slowly. The longer she took getting to the phone, the more time she bought them. Finally, she reached the front office. Lamar and Dugar waited by the phone. Ilara took the phone.
You're 2 days early.
You have been fortifying,
Nez said with clinical precision.
We had an agreement. You broke it. If you can't keep a simple deadline, what guarantee can you offer that you will honor any other agreements?
I'm giving you this one last chance to avoid bloodshed. Consider the fate of your people. Consider the children's lives. Once I clear the wall, I cannot guarantee anyone's safety.
You're not listening to me, she told him. Go back to where you came from and come back in 2 days. That was the agreement. You made it with me and I will hold you to it.
Incredulous silence filled the phone. Lamar grinned.
You will regret this, Nez said.
No, she told him. But you will. You're full of it. You want to negotiate with me, but clearly you can't be trusted.
You actually expect me to withdraw and come back in 2 days?
Yes.
No.
Do you even have the authority to negotiate, Landon?
I have all the authority.
It seems to me that you don't. I understand that you negotiated with Hayville in Nebraska, and then the town burned to the ground.
Nez's voice came out clipped, each word razor sharp.
I didn't burn Hayville. Your husband did.
Precisely. It didn't matter what deals you made, because there is a higher authority above you that actually makes decisions. You are a servant, Landon, a glorified gopher. We are defending our home. You are just carrying out orders.
Dugar clamped his hand over his mouth.
I'm not even mad at you, Landon. Everyone has a job they have to do. But don't waste my time again trying to negotiate. You have no power to do it.
I will take your castle, Nez said. His voice sent a chill down her spine. I will tear it apart, brick by brick. Then I will make you watch as I personally cut the throat of every man, woman, and child that survives the assault.
Do you know why Hugh burned Hayville? Because you couldn't do it. My husband is better than you.
You're a stupid whore.
There goes the mask of civility. Roland had only two warlords, but you are the 23rd Legatus of the Golden Legion. Do you know why? It's because Hugh is beloved by his soldiers, while you are reviled by the masters of the dead. Every man under his command would die for him, while the people who serve you can't wait to stick a knife in your back.
I'll make sure it takes you weeks to die.
Hugh is a better general, a better fighter, and a better man. You're second best. You will always be second best. You're replaceable. One day one of your helpers will kill you and take your place, and Roland won't blink an eye, while Hugh is one of a kind. Oh, and his dick is bigger than yours.
A disconnect signal cut off the call. Lamar clapped and bowed. She dropped the phone back into its place and turned back to the wall. There were too many people between her and the tower for magic, so she hurried on foot, across the bailey, up the stairs, back to the top of the flanking tower, where Hugh waited. The entire clearing before the tree line was filled with undead.
"How did it go?" Hugh asked.
"He's frothing at the mouth."
"That's my girl," he grinned at her.
The last of the stragglers made it through the gates. The iron dogs had followed, and the massive drawbridge rose up, blocking the entrance. A clump of vampires shot out from the main mass of the undead and fell apart, revealing two people tied to crosses, naked from the waist up. The one on the left, a woman, wore the black shreds of an iron dog uniform. The one on the right slumped over, his gray curly hair stained with blood.
Oscar. Oh no.
Ilara really pissed Nez off. Usually Nez would have held back the hostages, waiting to see if he could use them as bargaining chips at the right moment. But instead he dragged them out into plain view, blinded by the need to hit back. Whatever she said to him, he wanted to punish her for it. The lone iron dog on the cross glared at the vampires. Irina. She'd been out by the southern edge of the town, scouting to the rear. That meant the digging crew likely grabbed her. Nez would be digging in from the southwest. Fury boiled inside Hugh. He hated to lose Irina, hated that her life was over, hated that Nez was the one who took it. If only he could get his hands on that bastard. Hugh stared at the woods behind the undead. Nez was out there somewhere, sipping coffee in his matador. None of the front scouting team had made it either. He saw the scouts from the east and west teams, but none from the north. That meant none survived. Next to him, Ilara had gone completely still. Her eyes narrowed, measuring the distance between her and the old man on the cross. She was thinking of rushing the field. He put his hand on her shoulder, anchoring her in place.
No.
She ignored him.
Ilara!
She turned to look at him, and cold shot through him. Her eyes were pure white.
Too many and too far, he told her.
I know,
she ground out. Savannah's voice cut through the noise of the bailey behind them.
To the wall! Come to the wall!
All around them, the villagers streamed to the wall, climbing up the stairs. Men, women, parents lifting small children on their shoulders. They lined up as if for a parade, watching the two people on the crosses. Those who didn't fit ran into the keep and filed out onto the curtain wall and balconies. More still waited in the bailey.
Don't look away!
Savannah called out.
You must witness and remember!
Dugar yelled from the other side. The departed held still and silent. The hair on the back of Hugh's neck rose. There was something unnatural in the way they stared, passing judgment on the undead below. The vampire sitting by the older man jumped up. Sickle claws flashed and ripped him from breastbone to waist. Entrails spilled out, hanging from his body in grotesque garlands. The man screamed, a short guttural sound. Ilara didn't move a muscle. No sound came from the wall. They looked on just as she did, bearing silent witness.
Do not look away!
Savannah said into the silence.
Watch and remember,
Dugar echoed. The old man screamed and screamed. A second vampire tore the stomach of the iron dog, spilling her innards. Irina howled. It was the long, ululating howl the iron dogs made when they rode in battle. A chorus of howls answered from inside the castle, the dogs acknowledging their own. Hugh turned, finding Yvonne on top of the west gate tower. Their stairs connected. The archery commander whipped back. Two crossbow bolts ripped the air, glowing with magic. The first took Oscar in the throat. The second sank into the iron dog's chest. The sorceress bolts buzzed and exploded. Two people next to Yvonne lowered their crossbows. One of them, slight and short, glanced at him, and Hugh recognized Alex Tong. The wall stayed silent.
His name is Landon Ness,
Ilara said, her voice snaking through the crowd. A chant rose from the villagers.
Landon Ness! Landon Ness!
Emotion poured out of a thousand throats. Indignation and anger melded into a furious mix. Even the children chanted. Hugh saw Stoyan on another tower, looking around wild-eyed.
We are one,
Ilara whispered next to him.
We are the departed.
He felt something rise from the collective chant, something vicious and furious and unimaginably ancient.
Landon Ness!
A shimmer gathered above the crowd as if the air along the wall had suddenly grown hot. The edge of it brushed him. Ghostly howls echoed in his head and broke into a primitive savage snarl. He jerked back on instinct.
Landon Ness!
The invisible thing tore free of the wall and hurled itself at the tree line. Trees jerked as if grasped by an invisible hand. Birds shot out of the woods, screeching. Something thudded, metal whined, and a siren blared. He recognized the sound. It belonged to the people's armored troop transports. Next to him, Ilara stood, her teeth clenched. Okay, first things first. He would win this battle, and then he would figure out what the hell she was and what he had gotten himself and his people into.
Did you get him? He asked.
No, she said, her expression hard. But we rattled his cage.
On the field below, vampires became utterly still. Standard protocol as the navigators waited for orders. They only had a few minutes before Nez shook the surprise off. A charge was coming.
Everyone not in uniform, off the wall!
Hugh roared. The blast of sound took her by surprise, and Ilara jerked. The villagers scattered, running down the stairs.
You know where to be!
Ilara called out.
To your places!
In the bailey, Savannah and Dugar herded people into the buildings. Next to Hugh, Sam put his mouth to the horn and blew a high-pitched note. The iron dogs took up positions on the wall, fighting against the current of her people.
Artillery! Fire at will!
Hugh ordered. Sam blew a new note, a harsh war call. The ballistae creaked, the strings of the massive bows twanged, and sorceress bolts shrieked, tearing the air. A couple of undead jerked, suddenly impaled. Most had dodged, but the emerald green bolt heads exploded with magic, throwing dirt, rocks, and gaunt bodies. The vampire wave gathered in the clearing before the trees crested, and surged toward Balia. Fear pierced the back of Ilara's neck. There were more than 50. There had to be. One of the iron dogs on top of the gate tower spun around. Hansi covered her face, drawn in blue ink. She twisted, flexible and fluid like water, and came to rest on one foot, all her weight on her bent back leg, her right leg bent in front of her at an angle, toes barely touching the ground. Her right arm stretched to the sky, and horizontal, as if she was trying to press it against the clouds. Her left arm, bent at the elbow, guarded her chest. The massive catapult on top of the keep whined. A rock the size of a small car streaked over their heads. The undead scattered, making a hole in their ranks. The stone thudded into it. The woman moved, fast like a whip, snapping into a new pose, and spat a single word. The stone pulsed with orange and exploded. Rock shrapnel pelted the undead. Some fell, but more were coming, fast, scurrying forward like ugly twisted lizards. The ballistae spat more bolts. The air smelled of sorcerous smoke, crackling with expended magical energy. It felt as if she were caught in some magical storm made of explosions, screams, and warhorns. It called on her to do something, to run, to scream, to kill. She glanced at Hugh. He stood next to her, immovable like a rock, his face almost relaxed.
Archers! Fire at will!
The horn howled. The first line of vampires jumped into the moat and sank. One by one they dove down, disappearing into the water, while the archers peppered them with bolts and arrows. She leaned against the parapet to get a better look. Everything rode on this moment. Nothing, only placid water. Hugh leaned forward, his expression impassive. A hint of dark red floated to the surface from the moat's depths. The water boiled and the color vanished. Seconds ticked by, slow and viscous. 1, 2, 5, 10. She fought with herself to stand still. 15. The water at the inner edge of the moat swirled. A vampire emerged. It dragged itself forward, its movement sluggish, reached with one long muscular arm, hooked its claws into the wall, and pulled itself up. She watched it climb slowly, each stretch an effort. It was almost directly under her now. Ilara backed away. The undead heaved itself over the wall onto the tower. It landed heavily on the stones. The flesh on its frame sagged, as if it had gone liquid under its hide.
It worked. It actually worked.
The vampire swayed. Hugh stepped forward, pulling his sword out and striking in a single explosive move. The black blade sliced through the vampire's torso, cleaving it in two. Black, foul-smelling fluid gushed onto the wall. The top half of the undead tumbled back into the moat. Hugh grabbed the bottom half by the leg and hurled it over the wall. A splash followed. She sidestepped the dark puddle and looked over the wall. All along the moat, vampires staggered to the wall, slow and shaking. Some moved faster, others slower. Blood-red sparks shot out of the trees, a meteorite shower in reverse. Hugh grabbed her hand and jerked her down, covering her with his body. A red missile shrieked through the air, landed in the bailey and exploded. The walls of Balia shuddered. Red fire splashed on the wall to the left of them, and an iron dog vanished in the glow with a sharp cry. All around them the magic missiles fell with a high-pitched whine, crashing against the stones of Balia. Ilara wedged herself against the wall, trying to make herself smaller. Hugh grinned at her.
Fun!
The man was a maniac. She had married a raving lunatic. A deep bellow shook the castle, as if some god blew an enormous trumpet. Hugh raised his head and she squirmed from under him, trying to see. The trees snapped, parting. Something snaked between the crowns. A long, dark thing that swung and coiled. It caught a tree and yanked it out of the ground, turning it sideways. Clumps of soil rained down from the root ball. The tree flew aside, and through the gap, Ilara saw a moving darkness. It leaned left, then right, still hidden by the forest. 5-foot-wide trunks snapped like toothpicks and crashed aside, carrying branches with them, giving way to something impossibly large. A blunt head emerged, level with the top of the forest canopy, and crowned by a mesh of braided golden ropes, each as thick as her wrist. A brilliant blue jewel embedded in the flesh sat in the middle of the forehead, where the net came to a point. 2 more heads joined it, and a creature emerged into the open. It had 3 heads, each flanked by wide ears. 6 ivory tusks thrust into the air. Each large enough to impale and carry off a truck. Its hide was solid black, as if it swallowed the evening sunlight. Erewhon. The colossal elephant took a step forward.
The armored cabin on its neck rocked. A huge chain was coiled around his legs. The ground shook. Lightning dashed along Erewhon's hide, spattering in bursts of electric blue, and in the light of those explosions, Ilara saw long white scars crossing the elephant's hide. Armed people emerged from the woods, ants next to a giant, and trotted toward the castle. Above him, a rain cloud boiled, just large enough to cover the hill. It ended abruptly, and beyond it the sky was the clear, beautiful blue of early evening.
Ilara! Hugh called.
She felt Erewhon's mind, dark and turbulent like a storm cloud. It called to her.
Ilara!
She reached out and brushed the edge of the storm with a wisp of her power. Agony exploded in her mind, images bursting one after another. Blood on the tusks, bodies under feet, the trumpet screams, flesh and bone collapsing under the immense weight, forehead smashing a house wall and emerging streaked with concrete dust, blood and rain, buildings shredded and destroyed, people tossed and trampled, pain, chains and blood, the stench, the feel, the vivid red of human blood.
Honey!
Hugh snarled in her ear. She jerked, breaking the contact, and clamped her hand over her mouth. The horror of it stained her. Hugh gripped her shoulder, turning her toward him.
That is a big-ass distraction. Ness is going to milk it for all it's got. He wouldn't have deployed it if the digging crew weren't closing in. I need you in the tunnels.
He's divine.
What?
Erewhon, he is divine.
Yes, I know. Tunnels, Ilara.
You can't kill him.
You patted her shoulder.
Of course I can. I can and I will.
No!
She grabbed his hand, desperate.
He's enslaved. He's suffering. You can't kill him.
He stared at her.
Ilara, you're killing me. It's a giant fucking elephant who is going to knock down our walls in about 5 minutes.
It's not his fault.
Hugh squeezed his eyes shut for a long moment.
Promise me you won't kill him. Promise me, Hugh, and I'll go into the tunnels. Please.
Hugh opened his eyes, clenched his fist, unclenched it, and said,
Okay.
Promise me.
I promise, he ground out. Now please go to the tunnels.
She ran down the steps. Behind her, Hugh roared.
Find Dugar! Get me that fucking druid!
Ilara hurried down the stairs. The winding stone stairway curved, burrowing lower and lower, and finally came to an end in a heavy wood and metal door. It stood wide open. Ilara walked through it. A round chamber waited, walls and floor stone. Torches and fey lanterns glowed on the wall, flooding the space with so much light they put electric bulbs to shame. Four arched doorways punctured the wall at even intervals, leading from the chamber into a circular hallway ringing the chamber in a semicircle. In the middle of the floor, a 12-year-old blonde girl sat cross-legged, holding onto a teddy bear. Joanna stood next to her. Ilara joined them.
Anything? Three.
Magdalena raised three fingers.
One here.
She pointed directly ahead.
One there.
The finger moved slightly to the right.
And one there.
Far right. Above them, something thudded. Ilara looked up.
What's going on?
Joanna signed.
Elephant.
Ilara explained and crouched by Magdalena.
How far are they, honey?
Magdalena hugged her bear, concentrating.
Getting closer. They're fast. Very fast.
Vampires. Had to be. Killing vampires required an effort. It wasn't as easy as ripping out a human soul. She could kill Mrogs by simple touch. She would have to concentrate on the undead. Ilara took a deep breath. She'd never had to kill them in bulk. Another thud. A puff of dust broke off the ceiling.
They broke into a hallway,
Magdalena said.
They are still far, but they're coming faster now. There!
She pointed to the far right.
Ilara looked at Joanna.
Take her out and bar the door.
Joanna shook her head.
No!
Yes, we might need your power. If they get through me, you are the last line of defense.
I don't want to.
Joanna, nothing about today has anything to do with want. Your power is vital. We will use it as a last resort only.
Go!
She said for emphasis. Quick steps echoed through the stairs behind them. Bale ran into the chamber, carrying his mace. Four iron dogs followed him, two men and two women, the best of the berserkers.
What are you doing here?
Ilara asked.
We are your support, Bale said.
Hugh had sent back up.
Leave, she said. I'm sorry, ma'am. We can't do that. We will obey your orders, but we have to stay,
Bale said.
What do you fear, Bale?
She asked him.
Nothing, he said.
You will fear after today, she said.
The berserker gripped his mace.
We have our orders.
What did he say?
Joanna asked.
Hugh sent him to guard me.
They're coming,
Magdalena said.
They're close.
Take her out now,
Ilara signed to Joanna.
Bar the door. Do this for me, please.
The witch took Magdalena by the hand and led her outside. The door shut, and the heavy metal bar thudded into place.
Stand against the wall,
Ilara said.
Do not move. Do not speak.
Bale opened his mouth.
My husband told you to obey my orders. Obey!
The iron dogs flattened themselves against the wall on both sides of the door. Ilara straightened. A magic uncoiled within her. The first vampire dashed sideways behind the doorway, a grotesque shadow, silent like a ghost. She pulled the bracelet off her left wrist and dropped it to the floor. The metal sometimes interfered. More undead crowded into the hallway. Her fingers paused over her wedding ring. She grasped it, slipped it off, and held it out to Bale. The berserker held his palm out. She dropped the ring into it.
Keep it safe for me.
Yes, ma'am.
The leading vampire stepped forward. Its maw gaped open and a precise male voice came through.
There is no need for senseless bloodshed. We have the superior numbers.
She knew how she looked to them. A single human woman, dressed in white, not particularly large or imposing. An easy target.
Turn around.
Ilara pulled the metal clasp out of her hair and it tumbled to her shoulders.
Leave and your minds will survive.
Team three, the vampire said. Engage hostiles.
Ilara pulled on her magic and punched the floor with it, drenching the chamber in her power. Tendrils of ethereal smoke curled from the stones, glowing with white. The walls shook. The hem of her white gown melted into the curls of magic, merging with it, as she acknowledged the power that was ancient before humans had named it. It was part of her, but she would never let herself become part of it. The first undead lunged at her. She caught it in mid-leap. It hung there, its throat in her hand, its navigator stunned. Then she opened her mouth and showed it her real teeth, and the human behind the vampire's mind screamed, the echo of his voice pouring out of the undead's throat. The red ball of sorcerous fire splashed over the keep's wall and exploded, sizzling down. Hugh held his hands out, channeling the magic into the second of four blistered bodies lying in front of him. The blue glow bathed the closest iron dog. Ken Gamble, taking short, desperate breaths, his dark skin blistered and torn. Third-degree burns, posterior neck, upper back, left upper chest, left lower back, and dorsal side of both upper and lower extremities. He sank the magic in, repairing the cooked tissues. Nez had resumed the bombardment.
Erewhon's bulk hampered the ballistae set on top of his matador somewhat, but they must have fanned out to shoot around him. The elephant was moving at a crawl. Nez was trying to buy time. Ilara would handle it. Bale would help. Hugh had lost the engine and half of her crew on the north flanking tower. The other half moaned on the ground in front of him. Another cluster of explosions drowned the gate towers. Hugh craned his neck to check the artillery. Both catapults still survived. The Iron Dog's breathing evened as his skin sloughed off, revealing a new healthy layer. Hugh moved on to Iris, who was next down the line. Ken pushed upright.
"Reinforce the gate crews," Hugh told him.
The Iron Dog rolled to his feet, grabbed his sword, and took off for the gate. Second-degree burns, face, neck, upper chest. His arm hummed, the magic vibrating through him. Hugh squeezed his fist to get the blood pumping and concentrated on healing. Another blast. Dugard dashed along the wall and dropped down next to Hugh.
"Where do you want it?"
"On the walls, directly across from where he will hit us."
"Some of those are poisonous."
"Doesn't matter." Dugard nodded and waved his arm. People ran along the wall, carrying sacks and plastic bags. The ground trembled. Erewhon was close. Iris rolled to her feet. He grabbed the two remaining Iron Dogs by their shoulders, pouring the magic in, healing in twin streams. A trumpet blast of sound cut through the explosions. They didn't have much time. Ilara dropped the last undead on the floor and stared into the darkness of the doorway directly in front of her. The first two digging crews lay dead on the floor. Something was coming. Something different.
"Do not move," she whispered.
The five Iron Dogs stood completely still. A shadow moved in darkness, darker than the rest. A dry clacking sound slipped through the tunnels. Ilara swayed like a striking cobra, side to side, her magic lying in wait on the floor. It was still strong, still potent, but she was growing tired.
Clack, clack, clack.
Closer and closer.
Scrape. Clack, clack. Scrape. Clack.
It stopped. It waited. She could wait too. She had all the patience in the world. The torches flickered. Magic whispered through the chamber. She saw it. A clump of blackness trailing smoke, smothering each torch in turn. The fey lanterns blinked and went dark. In the dark, it moved. Ilara smiled and laughed softly, magic dripping from her voice.
"Do you think I fear darkness? I was born in it."
Her magic shot up the walls. The fey lantern sparked with pure white light. A tall dark creature stood in the chamber. It wore a ragged robe, black and tattered, its many layers stained with rot and grease. The stench of carrion polluted the air. Its hair was long and black. Two twisted horns, coated in old blood, curved from its head, like those of a bison, but rotated to curve upward and pointed forward. Its skin was the brown of a mummified corpse. Someone had carved its face, and the scars had healed badly, twisting and slicing through the flesh. Its mouth was a wide, lipless gash. A mask of yellow paint traced its eyes. They were dark and opaque, the eyes of a corpse injected with gray ink, except for the irises. Ringed in black, they were a brilliant pale blue, the pupils tiny dots in the ring of near white. It felt old. The human had long ago died. His body was just a vessel now for something dark and ancient. It raised its hand, showing the long threads hanging from its skeletal fingers, each cord supporting human finger bones. It moved its clawed fingers. The bones bumped into each other.
Clack, clack, clack.
Two beasts trotted out of the darkness, their long claws scraping the floor. They stood on all fours, gaunt like vampires, with every bone sticking out,
but where undead were bald, these were covered in dark human body hair. Someone had shaved designs on their hides and traced them with the same yellow paint. Large wolf-like ears protruded from their skulls. Their heads were too long, the jaws protruding too far, as if someone had jammed the skull of a horse into a human head and tried to stretch the skin over it, but didn't quite succeed. Lipless, noseless, their nostrils two holes between the two ridges of exposed bone that ran along the center of their skulls, the creatures glared at her with white eyes. Lessons from long ago surfaced in Alara's memory. She'd been warned about these before. Ah, yes, it made sense.
I know of you, Alara said. Once you were a shaman. Once you healed the sick and spoke to spirits.
The creature stared at her.
But then Nez took you. He made you do evil things. Then, when you died, he used your corrupted shell to invite something over, out of the deep darkness. It took your body. You're a Scudicamooch, a ghost witch.
The creature didn't move.
You're a thing of old magic now.
Alara bared her teeth.
But this is my castle. There is room for only one ancient monster here. And you've overstayed your welcome.
The twin beasts lunged at her. She lashed the left with her magic, trying to rip its power from it. The yellow symbols flashed with light. Her powers glanced off. The beast clamped its jaw on her wrist, the other locked onto her forearm. Teeth pierced her skin, drawing blood. Agony shot up her arms, burning. The beasts pulled her arms apart, anchoring her. Panic struck at Alara, pushing her straight to the hidden part of herself, where the iceberg of her power waited, locked away. All she had to do was reach for it. No, she gritted her teeth. No! The ghost witch struck at her, trying to claw her throat open with its talons. Alara pulled the magic out of herself and vomited it into the witch's face. The Scudicamooch shrieked, reeling back. She needed her hands, but the beasts were chewing her flesh to pieces. The Scudicamooch lunged again. Alara spat another torrent of power. The Scudicamooch recoiled. Bale bellowed like an enraged rhino and smashed his mace into the skull of the right creature. Bone cracked. Bale hissed again and again, driving the mace into it in a frenzy. The icy fangs opened. The beast spun toward Bale. Alara leaned and jammed her hand into its mouth. Her fingers closed about its putrid tongue, and she punched her power down its throat. Her magic found the dark, slimy seed that animated it, swallowed it, and cracked it between its teeth. The beast sagged and collapsed, suddenly boneless. Its body fell apart, pieces of its flesh dropping. Alara spun and jammed her fingers into the other beast's eyes. They popped under her fingertips. Her magic pierced the beast and it fell apart, dead. The Scudicamooch snarled, biting the air with blood-red fangs the size of Alara's fingers. A cloud of darkness poured out of it, filled with ghostly teeth and claws. The smoke wrapped around Alara. Her skin came alive with pain, as if the air had turned into a whirlwind of broken glass. She tore through it, and locked her hands onto the ghost witch's throat. The creature bucked. She felt the thing inside the once human body writhe. It was old and powerful, but she was stronger, and she choked it, sinking her claws into the flesh, piercing it with her magic again and again. All the magic she had flowed from the floor onto the flailing Scudicamooch. The glowing white tendrils wrapped around the ghost witch, choking it. Alara opened her mouth, knowing her jaws gaped too wide as she tried to engulf the Scudicamooch's head in it. The darkness tore out of the ghost witch's back. The corpse deflated in Alara's hands like an empty water skin. The darkness shuddered, fangs, teeth, horns spinning within it, and vanished. The torches and fey lanterns came back on. Alara's jaw snapped back in place. She dropped the corpse and held out her hand.
My wedding ring,
please.
Bale produced the wedding ring and put it in her palm. His fingers shook. Ilara slipped the ring on. There. A deep blast of sound came from above, muffled by the stone, but still clearly recognizable. The scream of Erewhon. Ilara whirled and ran to the door. Hugh stood on the wall, presenting a nice clear target. The damn elephant was so big he blocked the light. Behind Erewhon, the cleaning crew was trying to drag the trees he had knocked down to ford the moat. Fine time for Ness to grow a brain. Along the wall, the iron dogs crouched next to bags and crates, Ilara's people sandwiched between them.
Do you think this will work?
Dugar asked next to him.
She won't let me kill him,
Hugh ground out.
This is all I've got.
Erewhon took a ponderous step forward. Lightning rolled off his sides. Only a few dozen feet separated him from the moat. The elephant's eyes glared at Hugh, filled with pain and madness. Erewhon had seen him and was heading straight for him.
Get your people out of here, Hugh told Dugar. With your permission, I think we'd better stay. We're better at this sort of thing than you are.
If this doesn't work, the entire wall is coming down.
Dugar spread his arms.
Life, death, all part of existence.
Erewhon took another step. The castle shook. Waves pulsed through the moat.
Don't step in it, Hugh prayed silently. Don't you fucking step in it.
The concrete would never take that much weight. Erewhon bellowed. Hugh clamped his hands over his ears. The wail of the tortured elephant shook the castle. The wind of it tore at their clothes. The howl died, and Hugh screamed into the silence.
Hold it!
The iron dogs held still. The colossal elephant took another step, falling just short of the water. Hugh could see nothing now. No forest, no fields, only Erewhon's three huge heads and the armored cabin on his neck. Somewhere in there, the Beastmaster rode. Take out the Beastmaster and you take out the beast.
Wait, Halliday, just wait.
The gem in Erewhon's head pulsed with red. The colossal elephant screamed and leaned forward. Suddenly, the enraged eyes were only a few yards away. Breath caught in Hugh's throat. Fear dashed through him. He swallowed it and called out,
Now!
The iron dogs and Ilara's people opened the bags and crates and hurled the contents in the direction of Erewhon. Flowers rained down on the wall of Balyeh. The humans dropped to their knees, stretching their hands before them. Hugh scooped two handfuls of the blossoms and bowed, hands held out before him.
Erewhon! Hugh called out. Mount of Indra! King of all elephants! He who binds clouds! He who reaches to the underworld and brings forth rain! We bow before you! Please accept our offering!
He braced himself for the lash of the enormous trunk. Erewhon held still. Hugh held his breath. The colossal elephant reached over with his central trunk and swept the bags of flowers up, curling his trunk around them gently as if they were priceless treasures. The jewels sparked with red. Erewhon screamed. The force of his voice nearly knocked Hugh off the wall. He grabbed onto the wall and held onto it. Above him, blood poured from under the armored cabin, running over Erewhon's skull. Tears swirled in the elephant's eyes, but Erewhon didn't move. Hugh straightened.
Let me help you! Lord of the clouds, let me help!
Erewhon's eyes focused on him. The divine elephant ducked his central head, uncoiling his trunk.
Now or never.
Hugh jumped onto the trunk. The earth moved underneath him, and then he was running up Erewhon's lifted trunk, over his forehead and to the cabin. Wards pulsed. The bitch had warded the cabin.
Sweetheart, you'll need more than that.
Hugh sucked in a lungful of air.
Habasu!
Break. The power word shattered the protective spell. The cabin split apart.
Halliday jumped out, a sharp stick with a jewel in one hand and a curved sword in another. She spun like a dervish and lashed at him. He batted her blade aside and bashed at her with his sword. She blocked. She was a large woman, but he was stronger, and the impact knocked her back. Hugh drove her back, across the elephant's spine, raining blows on her. Halliday snarled like a cornered animal, slicing in a whirlwind. He thrust between her strikes and felt the slight resistance as the black blade slid home. Halliday froze, her mouth opened in a terrified, shocked O. Hugh grasped the rod out of her hand and kicked her off his blade. She crawled away from him. He chased her, step by step, until she reached the edge of Erewhon's enormous back. Halliday bared her teeth.
Fuck you, you piece of shit!
He laughed and kicked her in the face. She slid off Erewhon and crashed to the ground with a scream. The elephant's back rolled as a colossal hind leg shifted a few yards to the right. Hugh turned and ran back to the front of the elephant, down the trunk and back onto the wall. The control rod flowed with red. It was a vicious thing, 3 feet long with a razor-sharp metal point with a hook on the blade to rip the flesh on its way out of a wound. The point was covered in blood. Magic crackled down its length, sliding from the gem at the top to the metal tip. He who controlled the rod controlled Erewhon. The thought occurred to him almost as if it came from someone else. He looked up and saw the tears in the elephant's eyes. He wasn't that much of a bastard.
Mace!
Hugh roared. One of the iron dogs thrust a mace at him. Hugh put the control rod on the parapet and swung. The mace head crushed the jewel. He lifted the control rod up and broke it over his knee. The huge gem in Erewhon's head cracked. Pieces of it tumbled out, crashing to the ground. The elephant raised his trunks and let out a triumphant bellow. The chains binding his feet snapped. Next to Hugh, Dugar stared, open-mouthed. Erewhon spread his ears. Above him, clouds burst with rain. It poured over his body, washing away the dark pigment from its hide. Rivulets of stained rain dripped to the ground, and where they touched the grass, flowers bloomed. The humans on the wall stared, mute. Erewhon bellowed again, his voice filled with joy. His scars faded. The last of the darkness slid off, and he stood revealed and glowing white. The elephant waved his trunks, shook his ears, flinging the raindrops, and vanished. Only a patch of bright flowers remained where he had stood.
It worked, Dugar said. How did you know to bring flowers?
He's worshipped in Thailand with offerings of flowers and garlands. A god will do almost anything to keep his worshippers safe. They're the source of his power and existence. Dugar smiled, wiping the rain from his face. Below, the cleaning crew halted its advance, confused. The lines in disarray as Nez tried to regroup. Hugh grinned.
You're my witness, he said to Dugar. She owes me one.
Tell her yourself, the druid said.
Hugh turned. Ilara was standing on the steps. In his head, she took the 3 steps that separated them and kissed him. But she stayed where she was, and then she smiled, her whole face lighting up.
Thank you.
Worth it.
Did you see me free the elephant? He asked.
I saw.
He noticed blood caked on her arms.
They will heal. I won too, she said. I'm afraid Bale might never be the same.
Hugh saw Bale behind her. The berserker looked white as a sheet.
He's resilient, Hugh said. He'll get over it. Magic cracked like a whip across the battlefield.
They spun around to face it. A portal opened in the middle of the field, and rocks poured onto the grass.
Chapter 16. Ilara stared at the armored column. It kept coming and coming, 20 men to a line, more and more, never ending. They split as they stepped out onto the grass, one line moving left, the next right, forming into 2 rectangles.
There had to be over 1,000 soldiers on the field now. The rain drenched them, and still they came, line after line. The Morogs wrapped around the two columns like a shifting dark sea.